This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us, wherever you are. Welcome to episode 82 of TPF Live, powered by SpoilerDiecast.com. I'm Rob Tiansen, joined alongside Nathan Solomon, back in action from his one-week vacation. Can't keep a good man down from the racing action. He's always going to be around. So we're here, ready to think about what happened at Michigan and then look ahead to the weekend at Indianapolis, which is actually just really a day away as of this recording on Thursday night, August 10. But this will probably be dropping on Friday morning. So think of it like your morning breakfast before the truck playoff race at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. And then, of course, the IndyCar action that will be happening at IMS, along with the Cup Series and Xfinity Series. So lots to get to, lots to talk about. And certainly, I'm excited to have Nathan back in action. And also to shout out to Kirsten Lewis for joining us last week. You'll be actually hearing from her quite a bit because Kirsten will be a recurring guest co-host with us on this program. So on the World's Fastest Hour of Racing Talk, we're going to have the both amazing worlds that we have on our podcast here. So of course, it wouldn't be TPF Live without any hot seat interviews. And on this edition, we've got a couple of great young drivers who will be featured later on our program. Of course, that being Carson Brown from the Team Hornaday Development Camp. He's actually the last driver that we interviewed from that great program that's run by Candace Hornaday and Ron Hornaday Jr. And then, of course, we've got an up-and-coming, actually current truck driver in Caden Honeycutt from the great state of Texas. Nathan actually had the chance to talk to him recently, so we'll feature their interview on the sort of nightcap portion of the show. So getting down to the nitty-gritty for us, let's go bring in Nathan. Nathan, I know we've got a lot to basically talk about, kind of consider with this post-Michigan pre-Indianapolis edition. And of course, the truck playoffs beginning. So lots to get to, I'm sure.
No doubt. It's a busy time in the NASCAR world. It is good to be back here this week. I, of course, was away last week on vacation. But yeah, ready to get back into the groove of things. Obviously, I was still writing last week, but plenty of podcasting action coming up. We are looking forward to getting to Watkins Glen next week, and that's quickly approaching. Looking forward to my home race. And that basically means a couple of things. It means that the regular season's almost over. And on a personal note, it also means that summer's over because I go back to St. Bonaventure in 2 weeks. So that's crazy. So time is flying. Summer is coming to an end. But that does mean the heart of the NASCAR season is still to come.
Well, summer's ending in most places. I guess Texas didn't get the memo because today in our area in the greater Austin region, we hit a record 110 degrees. And that's not a dry heat. This is humid heat, folks. I feel like I am Persephone doing her time in the underworld right now. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're probably the kind of person who can't pronounce Socrates and says Socrates. But anyways, I'm not here to do any education. Although, shout out to Nathan, by the way, because he'll be kicking off his senior year in a couple of weeks. So, woohoo to that. But I know, man, because I was a senior in grad school. You were actually just coming off freshman year, going into sophomore year when we started this thing. So this has been a time capsule for you in terms of your Bonnie experience. But I'm a former Bonnie. Proud to be one. Anyways, folks, we got to talk about why you should be tuning into this show because of our sponsor, SpoilerDiecast.com. So why don't we hear why it's a great idea to go shop with our partner and how you can save some money right now.
Hey, racing fans. Are you in the hunt for the latest diecast cars from Lionel Racing or F1 or IndyCar diecasts? Well, look no further. If you head to SpoilerDiecast.com, you'll find all of the latest and greatest diecast cars and get free shipping and 5% off of your orders if you use promo code TPF by spending $20 or more on your items. Head over to SpoilerDiecast.com and let Evan and his team know that you want the best diecast cars around And if you use promo code TPF, you'll be in the winner circle. It doesn't get better than that. So just head on over to spoilerdiecast.com and make your latest purchases today.
That's right, girls and boys. Promo code TPF is here to save the day, save some money, and get you some free shipping. Who doesn't like that? So do it today. Make Evan get to work on your orders to get your Lionel NASCAR collectibles and your Greenlight collectibles for those Indy cars and eventually, those Hendrick Motorsports First Win Collection cars that they're going to be releasing in Q1 2024. Awesome times ahead in the world of diecast collecting. With that, folks, we're going to head into podium perspectives. Now, let's actually kick things off. More of a somber subject to talk about that happened basically leading up to Michigan Race Week, but Noah Gregson liked a tweet or X post at this juncture. Sometime between late May to about early August, I won't really get into the depth as to what that post was about, at least to say, given NASCAR's stride to be more inclusive and certainly more embracive of different walks of life, people of color, let us just say that Noah Gregson did a no-no on social media. So immediately, you know, Legacy Motor Club issued a tweet saying their part. Noah Gregson then put up a post saying, you know, as a lapse of judgment or something to that extent. Josh Berry filled in for him in the 2 days of Michigan race for the Cup Series that ended up being a miserable day for the 42 team. Anyways, folks, you know, Gregson was eventually released. The first part of it was The Athletic's Jordan Bianchi was like, he's gone. And then Jim Utter of motorsport.com was like, nope, that's not what I was told. But as of Thursday, it's official that Noah Gregson asked to be released. I am not going to speculate. I'm just going to go off the facts. Yes, he was asked to be released from the team. So now the number 42 team is going to go in a different direction for the rest of the season and presumably have a full-time driver for 2024 once they switch over to Toyota. Those are the facts of the matter. Now, Nathan and I, we've talked about this with our team. But Nathan, of course, I'm sure you've got some thoughts about, you know, this unfortunate event, a series of circumstances, and now where Noah and the team goes from here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it got handled pretty much as well as it could have. Obviously, I don't know exactly when Legacy got made aware of what had happened on social media, whether it was Twitter or whether it may have been Instagram, actually. I don't remember exactly what platform it was, but the point's still the same. They obviously took initiative, suspended him. NASCAR, you know, quickly did the same. So I think from an internal standpoint, I think Legacy probably handled it as best as they could. Obviously, you weren't going to see a situation where they were going to part ways over the weekend. Obviously, the race had to kind of be their number one priority in getting that car on track with somebody. And they went with Josh Berry, somebody who's made 7 or 8 cup starts this year. I forgot the number off the top of my head, just with Hendrick. And, I they obviously picked Berry. I mean, he's a Chevrolet driver. I don't think Hendrick or really any of the other Chevy teams have really anticipated using Barry again this year, especially because he's going to Ford with Swerve Racing. But I think with the OEM change impending for Legacy, that's kind of why they ended up going with Josh Berry. To your point, after, having a couple of days, beyond the race weekend to kind of digest everything and, discuss things internally with the team. They, made a decision to part ways. Noah Astor was released today, Thursday. A terrible situation. I mean, obviously Noah did it to himself. But I'm interested to see how Noah can learn from it because this doesn't have to be game over for Noah Gregson. I mean, this hopefully can be something that he can learn from and come back from. I mean, when something very similar happened to Kyle Larson in 2020. And, obviously I think the circumstances were definitely different. But the concept was still the same, and NASCAR suspended him. He got, he got fired, or they parted ways with Chip Ganassi Racing, and he learned. He came back from it. He went through sensitivity training. Got trust built back up with a team and an organization and sponsors. And he got another opportunity again, and look what happened. He went out in 2021 a year later and won the championship. So, I hope something similar can happen with Noah. I hope it's not the end of Noah Gregson. I mean, I would hate to see anybody go out of this sport like that. But if he comes back, hopefully he comes back in the right frame of mind, and educated, and it's just a better Noah. So. I want to see him come back. I want to see him learn from this, and I still want to see him succeed. But obviously, it won't be an overnight process. It'll take a lot of time, and hopefully, everything can pan out for him in the future. But hopefully, this will be a massive learning experience for him.
Oh, certainly. It's that you hit it right on the head there, Nathan, about it being similar to what Kyle Larson went through. And for folks who may not be aware, or say, "Oh, NASCAR is woke and all of that." Let it be known that in the NASCAR rule books, section 4.4, the NASCAR member code of conduct, penalty options and guidelines, subparagraph D, it says member actions that could result in a fine and or indefinite suspension include actions by a NASCAR member that NASCAR finds to be detrimental to stock car racing or NASCAR. That's certainly qualified. And definitely the second part right here, statement and or communication made public, parenthesis, including social media platforms, end parenthesis, that demeans, criticizes, ridicules, otherwise disparages another person based upon that person's race, color, creed, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, marital status, religion, age, or handicapping condition. And then, of course, on section 4.3, the NASCAR member conduct, subparagraph A, NASCAR membership is a privilege. With that privilege comes certain benefits, responsibilities, and obligations. Correct and proper conduct, both on and off the racetrack, is part of a member's responsibilities, and a member's action can reflect upon the sport as a whole and on other NASCAR members. Ideally, NASCAR members are role models for many fans who follow the sport, regardless of the type of license a member may hold or the specific series in which a member may participate. Therefore, NASCAR views a member's conduct, both on and off the racetrack, which might constitute a behavioral rules violation under this rulebook, with great importance. So it's not a woke situation, it's written in stone. And just like on TPF, we also have sets of guidelines and rules. And if people break those, then there's consequences for violating those expectations, rules, and conducts, code of conducts that we have in place. It's just like working in the workplace, folks. There's certain things you just can't say. And no, it's not because social media is bad or, this is why you shouldn't be posting. It's like blaming a car for an accident when someone is inhibited or is definitely not in any condition to drive. It's not the car's fault. It's the person's fault. So I certainly hope that, Noah understands why what he did was incorrect. And, I'm not wanting him to get canceled. I want him to learn from this and understand that those things are not cool. And, you're 20, 24, 25 years old, you got to grow up too. And if he did that in front of somebody that, he basically poked fun at, I don't even call poked fun at, basically disparaged, I don't think he would be in any good shape. So I do expect NASCAR to keep hammering down on folks that do this kind of thing. And I'm just glad NASCAR did what they did, but I hope Noah finds it in his heart to be a better person. And when he does, that he gets that chance to prove that he is a better person too in time. With that, folks, let's shift gears and actually get to talking about Michigan, because honestly, folks, the Firekeepers Casino 400 at Michigan, yes, Mother Nature did impact it again. I think it was like the fourth postponed race of the year at this point for Cup. But my goodness, it was one of the best races in all of NASCAR Cup racing this year. not Kansas in May, legendary, but the duel between Chris Buescher and Martin Truex Jr. was something, but the buildup to even get to that point was something else. Michigan played out like a typical race over there. You have high-speed action. You have herring moments on the corners. You have fuel mileage becoming an issue. And, people not so much short-pitting, but trying to do something different to leapfrog Martin Truex Jr. And that's sort of what happened on Sunday and Monday, where Chris Buescher, who actually led the most laps, by the way, folks, he was able to get ahead of Martin Truex Jr. on the final round of pit stops. I think within the last, say, 35, 40 laps of the race. And it was interesting to see because we all knew how good Martin Truex Jr.'s car was. He was, Nathan said it himself, if he finds a way to get in front of the field, it's going to be a butt whooping. And essentially, that's what was happening. Truex was so darn fast, so good. But Buescher got ahead, and he got his second win in a row. It was not that straightforward. It was a lot of, great driving, defensive driving, trying to break the draft from Truex, even compromising his corner positioning, because the inside seemed to be an issue at Michigan, at least for the Cup Series, all weekend long. So, Nathan, how exciting was that victory for Chris Buescher, knowing that RFK Racing is really starting to validate their resurgence? And do you see a possibility of Buescher going 3 in a row this weekend at Indianapolis?
Yeah, I mean, I think at Michigan overall, I think we kind of saw a little bit of everything. I mean, we saw some great racing. We saw some strategy. We saw some fuel saving. We saw everything. We really did. And honestly, going into that race weekend, I didn't know what to expect because I knew the tire that they were bringing was really hard. In practice on Saturday, we weren't really seeing a ton of fall off, so I just didn't really know what to expect in that regard. But the racing was really good, and I mean, I think on Sunday, we obviously saw a lot of incidents. We saw a lot of guys just kind of losing it kind of by themselves. I mean, obviously tight, close proximity racing, but we were seeing guys get other guys loose, which we didn't see a whole lot of really up until these last couple of, intermediate style racetracks in Michigan and Pocono. Maybe some of the Pocono too, where guys are just kind of getting each other loose. It's just something you hadn't really seen a whole lot with the next gen car. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. And then Monday, the race was a lot calmer on Monday for sure. I mean, we got 75 laps in, or 74 laps in, and on Sunday, and I don't remember how many cautions we had. I think we had maybe 6 or 7 cautions in that span. We didn't really get a long run, but I think we only had 2 or 3 cautions in the Monday portion of the race, and one of them was a stage caution. So I think the entirety of stage 3 stayed green, or just about the entirety. I think there was maybe an early caution stage 3, so we had a long run. The reason why Buescher got ahead of Truex is they were basically on different pit strategies. Basically, Truex pitted at the end of stage 2, Buescher stayed out. So really, Buescher needed more fuel. Later, when he came down pit road for his green flag pit stop, and that's kind of how the car was going to get even out. But still, Buescher blended in ahead of Martin Truex Jr. There's really nothing Truex could do because clean air is just so king at a place like that. I know the track has really narrowed up over the years, especially with the repave 10 or 12 years ago, and narrow compared to a place like Fontana. But still, all things considered, it's a wide racetrack. It's a multi-groove racetrack, but there wasn't really a ton of lap traffic just because there wasn't a whole lot of tire fall off. The lap times were kind of in the same ballpark. So the air that Chris Buescher was racing in was basically completely clean. And when clean air is so king, it's really, really difficult for the guy in second place to make a path on the lead. And that's basically what happened. Martin Truex Jr., I think, was still better than Chris Buescher. But when he tried to go for a pass in his last 25 laps, he kind of just hit a wall of air. And I think it was with 12 or 13 to go, Chris Buescher got a little bit loose, I think, and Truex was able to get side by side. And they went into turn one. And that was Truex's chance. And he kind of bobbled a little bit and ended up losing like a second. And that was pretty much the race. I mean, Truex got back to Buescher's bumper with a couple laps to go, but there wasn't really anything he could do at that point. He wasn't really in a position where he could set himself up to make a good move, but it was still really good racing, even though he couldn't really make a pass for the lead. because of, you know, the aero stuff and clean air always being king. But I enjoyed the race for sure. But yeah, I mean, kind of coming back full circle here, Chris Buescher is, you know, he's the hottest driver in the series right now for the most part. Honestly, the two hottest drivers are Chris Buescher and Martin Truex Jr., who's consistently in the top five. And ironically enough, it's the second year in a row where a driver has won back-to-back at Richmond and in Michigan this summer. Kevin Harvick did that last summer as well. Now, in terms of three in a row for Chris Buescher, I think that's a pretty tall ask, even though he's a pretty good road course racer. I think three in a row would be pretty tough to ask for, you know, when you look at some of the other road course racers in the field and some of the road course ringers that they're bringing into this field too, including Shane Van Gisbergen, who, you know, won a little over a month ago at Chicago Street Course in his debut. So be a tough task for Chris Buescher. But, I mean, I think if he goes out and gets another top 10, I think that'd be a really solid day for him. But overall, I mean, RFK is certainly trending in the right direction. And in my opinion, they're pretty much far away the best four team right now.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Brad Keselowski doesn't get enough credit for the rejuvenation of this team that has been around since 1988 when it was founded by Jack Roush, and eventually they paired up with the Fenway Sports Group in 2007. This team is for real. They're not just some, you know, hey, Johnny come lately kind of team that, you know, they found lightning in the bottle. No, this team is for real, folks. They're so good. It's so exciting to see them be this competitive, genuinely on pace. And my hat's off to all the folks that have worked with Brad to make this team even better and faster, of course. So I'm looking for great things out of this organization in these next several weeks. And I think eventually Brad will win a race, but you know, you got to tip your cap to someone like Chris Buescher to get the job done and prove himself worthy of being in that 17 car. And he is certainly a good road course racer. I mean, he has proven himself at Sonoma each time out. And we're heading towards a technical road course like Sonoma. So who knows? Anything can happen when it comes to Indianapolis, which we'll talk about here very shortly, of course. Now, kind of on a different subject, of course, on this show, why don't we talk about the struggles of Hendrick Motorsports, who honestly, they started off this season so hot across all four teams, even when Chase Elliott got hurt and, you know, Alex Bowman got hurt. All of a sudden, it's like, other than Kyle Larson, this group has been, they've been searching. They've been wanting to get out of this current slump, if you will, because Chase Elliott was running towards the front of the field, and then it looked like he had a tire failure that put him in the wall between turns one and two, and ended his day and puts him really in a position to, you know, he needs to get a victory in order to make the playoffs, which is kind of an unusual thing to say about him, considering how talented he is and how good that team is, to know that they're in danger of missing the playoffs because they've been in compromising situations, as of late. And then Alex Bowman, this was the driver who was leading most of the early races of the season. And all of a sudden, yes, I know he got hurt in the high limits sprint car series, and that obviously impacted his efforts this year, but they're in danger of missing the playoffs too. Normally we see three or four Hendrick cars, and now we're starting to think, is it just going to be Kyle Larson and Alex Bowman? I mean, William Byron making it in. So Nathan, do you think either of these drivers or both of them are going to miss the playoffs at this juncture?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly looking that way. I mean, I don't want to write either one of them off because they're both very good race car drivers. I mean, I think the last three races of the regular season certainly suit Chase Elliott a little bit more than it suits Alex Bowman. I mean, I don't think Bowman's a particularly great road course racer, and I don't think he's not bad at super speedways, but he's just really never been able to finish races at super speedways. Chase Elliott has been able to finish races on super speedways. So, I mean, if you're going to pick one of those two drivers to win a race, I'd probably go with Chase Elliott right now, especially because, I mean, he's been pretty dominant at Watkins Glen over his career. I'd have to imagine I think he could be in the mix on Sunday at Indianapolis, but, I mean, I really think he'll be in the mix next Sunday at Watkins Glen. So, If I were to pick one of them, I'd pick Elliott, but right now it's certainly trending in the direction of both missing them. But yeah, I mean, Hendrick Motorsports as a whole has kind of just quietly been off the last month or so. I guess kind of starting with Loudon. I mean, outside of Kyle Larson, the other three cars were pretty much out to lunch there. Trying to go back to Pocono, I don't think any of them were. Actually, they were. I think all their cars are pretty good at Pocono. They just didn't finish. They're not. That's some of it right now. They're just not finishing races right now. And honestly, I don't even think they were that bad at Michigan. Just, you know, everybody outside of Kyle Larson didn't finish the races. I mean, they wrecked. So that's obviously has to be a cause for concern. Richmond, they were not very good at. So it seems like they've. I don't know if they've lost progress or other teams have kind of caught up to them on the short track side of things. So they're pretty dominant on the short tracks earlier in the year. So they certainly got some things that they kind of have to iron out. I mean, you look at Willie Byron, obviously he's very safe in the playoffs. I mean, a month ago after he won Atlanta, we were talking about, all right, this is the guy that could very well be the regular season champion. Now he's in third and he doesn't really have a chance to win a regular season championship. It's kind of a two-horse race, and really it's just a one-horse race. It's Martin Truex Jr. I think Denny Hamlin's 57 points back, so I guess it's still possible Hamlin could win, but Hamlin would have to have three very strong weeks and probably need some sort of misfortune on Truex's part, which I can't really see right now because they're running very smart, clean races. So HMS definitely has some things to clean up before the playoffs, but obviously their goal is to try to get as many cars locked into the playoffs over the next 3 weeks, and right now I think their best bet is the Chase Elliott win.
Certainly, because we all know how talented Chase Elliott is with road course races, and he's got two golden opportunities to make that happen this weekend in Indianapolis and really Watkins Glen, because when it comes to the super speedways, let's just say that Hendrick Motorsports is not exactly the best organization when it comes to having organized racing on those 2.5 to 2.66 mile mammoth speedways in Florida and Alabama. So there's going to be a lot of soul searching going on this weekend. And if the 9 and the 48 are out to lunch, then it's going to be a 50% happy campus in Concord. And the other half is just like 2024, folks. Now, before we get to winning time, we should definitely talk about a couple more other things. And then we'll do our winning picks, of course. Mainly the fact that the truck playoffs begin this Friday night or tomorrow night, really. And Corey Heim and Zane Smith enter as the favorites, really, because Heim is the regular season champion and Zane Smith is the second place driver in the playoff standings and the defending Truck Series champion. Why don't we hear from them first about, you know, what makes them feel so good about making it into the playoffs and hear their case to make, you know, win the championship this year. And Nathan, we wrote about, you wrote about Corey Heim, and I've got a story about Zane Smith going into this playoff round. What makes both of these drivers such dangerous threats to win, you know, in the round of 10 and pretty much make it to the championship round in Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, consistency for sure. I mean, I think that has to be the number one thing right now, at least for Corey Heim. I mean, he pretty easily won the regular season championship this year with just two wins. When you kind of consider, you know, other drivers who won regular season championships, like I think John Hunter Nemechek won it 2 years ago with I think five wins, right? So, I mean, it's not like he's going out and winning a ton of races. He's just there every single week. And he missed a race, too. He was sick and missed the Gateway race and still won the regular season by, I think, like 50 points. So, pretty impressive regular season effort there for Corey Heim, and I think he's for sure the favorite. I mean, you look at somebody like Zane Smith, I think he's been a little bit more inconsistent. There have been a couple of weeks seemingly out of nowhere where that 38 truck just kind of completely missed it. Like, just completely out of nowhere, it almost doesn't make sense. Like, man, they're 20th place truck for whatever reason. That's weird. And then I've had some bad luck, too. Like, the wreck they got caught up at Pocono a couple of weeks ago. So that 38 definitely has some stuff to clean up, but I'd say Corey Heim's definitely the favorite right now. I mean, I think of his 15 races, he's finished in the top 10 of 13 in 13 of them. So they're not making mistakes. That's what it comes down to. They're running clean races. They're not making mistakes. Obviously, maybe a couple of races got away from him a little bit, like that Pocono race where Kyle Busch passed him. And on the last lap. But right now, I'd certainly say Corey Heim is the hands-down favorite to win the regular season championship, but you certainly can't bet against Zane Smith, who won it last year.
Definitely, because Corey Heim, he shared what he learned in his late race battle with Kyle Busch, and Zane Smith obviously has felt that he stayed maybe a year too long in the truck series, and now he's got a chance to potentially be back or go to cup racing full time. Remains to be seen, but I think both of them have to be the odds on favorite. And we can't forget someone like a Carson Hocevar, who's really, really good at these kinds of racetracks. And he's got those three victories, folks. Unlike last year, where he was basically trying to fight off his injuries, sustained in that crash at Gateway. So it's going to be fun. Looking forward to the T-Sport 200 on Friday night. And we'll actually talk about next week about a great news for Front Row Motorsports in terms of Todd Gilliland and Michael McDowell being retained for next season. So we'll have more details about that, just because there's a lot of moving parts and pieces about that. And we're curious to see what happens to Zane Smith, if he's going to be kept with them, or does he go to another Ford Performance team next season? Well, why don't we get to winning time right now and name our picks to win the NASCAR races. I'll personally provide my IndyCar pick as well. Why the hell not? But it's winning time. So we're going to name our picks for the T-Sport 200 at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, where Grant Enfinger is the defending champion. And then Saturday's Pennzoil 150, the defending winner is AJ Allmendinger. And yes, folks, he's entered again. And then on Sunday, we've got the cup race, the Verizon 200, in which Tyler Reddick hopes to win his second race of the year. It's kind of weird to say only his second race of the year when we knew just how good he and 2311 would be this year. But Nathan, why don't you tell the folks at home who you're going to go with in terms of the races for cup, trucks, and Xfinity?
Yeah, it's pretty cool that we're back at IRP again for the second straight year. Tomorrow or Friday should be fun. A little doubleheader out there with ARCA and the truck series. For the truck series race, let me think here. Who do I want to pick? See, I don't go into these with my picks already set, so I like to do this on the fly. We'll go Ben Rhodes. I don't know why. I think that's a gut feeling. We'll go Ben Rhodes. He won earlier in the year. Charlotte, he'll win and lock himself in the second round. For the Xfinity Series, why not? We'll go AJ. AJ to back up his win from last year in the Xfinity Series and make it 3 years in a row where he's winning a race on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course, because, of course, he won the inaugural cup race on the road course for 21. And then in the Cup Series, I'm tempted to pick somebody like Tyler Reddick, but I feel like that team's just had too many mistakes on pit road for me to safely pick somebody like Reddick right now. I'll go Martin Truex Jr. I mean, that 19 car is just fast everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's a short track or a big track or a road course. That's kind of the car to beat right now in this series, and they're not making many mistakes. They're finishing the top five every week, so I'll go with points paying win number four of the year for MTJ.
Those are some solid picks for the action in Speedway in Claremont, Indiana. So I'm going to go and return the favor and give my picks for this weekend's races. So starting off with Friday night's T-Sport 200 at IRP, I am actually going to go with Carson Hocevar to win this race because, you know, certainly I think he is on the rise. He's certainly showing he's confident. And if he's got a very fast truck at IRP, I'm sure he's going to do what he can to get ahead and punch his ticket to the round of eight. I'll go with the number 42 truck. And by the way, folks, Shane Van Gisbergen will be in the truck race in addition to the cup race. Should be a lot of fun to see him make his oval debut, much like one Pablo Montoya made his oval debut at Talladega in Iowa in the ARCA series back in 2006. Now, on Saturday, of course, we'll kick things off with the Gallagher Grand Prix for the IndyCar series. And honestly, if Alex Palou wants to make life easier for himself, I say he wins in Indianapolis. He came so close to winning the Indy 500 and almost sweeping the month of May, but he had a pit stop issue in the Indy 500, still finished within the top five, but I know how badly he wanted to win
the Indy 500. So I say he returns to Indianapolis pretty much as a man on a mission, and he gets the job done with a victory at the Indianapolis Grand Prix circuit layout. And then for the Pennzoil 150 Xfinity race, well, I've tried to bet against AJ Allmendinger, and that didn't work out. So I'll go with him. I'll go with AJ for Saturday's race. And as far as the Verizon 200 is concerned, you know, you can't dismiss somebody who's got momentum like Chris Buescher, but you also have to be a little bit practical about what goes on in the Cup race. So consider the fact that the Toyotas have been really, really fast. You know, I like where Nathan was going with Martin Truex Jr. I say that Martin Truex Jr. will not win. It's going to actually be Tyler Reddick who gets the job done and gets win number two, kind of like he did last year when he was with RCR. So those are our picks, folks. What do you think? Tweet to us at the podium finish or send us a message on X. So weird to say that still. And Nathan's X handle, of course, is nsolly02. And my X handle is at Rob Tiongson. By the way, folks, those are the same handles on Threads. So let us know. And if you happen to get all the winning picks right, we will personally send you a 2023 164 in-stock car from spoilerdiecast.com. Well, with that, folks, why don't we jump on over to the hot seat? Here we are in the hot seat, and I will kick things off with the last of our great Team Hornaday Development Driver Interviews series. And I can't thank Taylor Kitchen enough for making this happen and keeping us in mind too, folks. On this final edition, we're going to hear from a really talented young driver in Carson Brown. He's such a lot of fun to talk to. And honestly, folks, he reminds me of a very young Kyle Larson, somebody who's pretty talented on the blacktop, but also loves to slug it out in the dirt tracks. And it's no surprise that Carson wants to make his way to the dirt track series. He races a partial 604 dirt late reschedule with Mike Millar at Delk Millar Racing. And he's also got some experience racing in legend cars and racing over at Millbridge in the micro sprint car series. So let's get to know more about Carson to kick things off, about this great 15-year-old driver from New London, North Carolina, and hear what makes him tick with racing. So for the first half of Hot Seat, here is Carson Brown. Carson, thank you so much for joining us here on TPF Lives and TPF's Hot Seat. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Always great to have you and your colleagues on. And as I've asked several of your colleagues, I'm just kind of curious, just to kind of break the ice here, how did you get interested in racing, and who were some of your favorite drivers that you watched growing up?
Yeah, so I actually started racing dirt bikes when I was younger. We had a farm, and I loved riding dirt bikes on the farm and four-wheelers, and just had a passion for anything with a motor and wheels. So I started racing dirt bikes, and then we found out that was very dangerous very quickly. So I was breaking bones and stuff, and my mom wasn't very happy. And we knew that it wasn't a great route moving forward and long term. So we made the move to cars, and ever since then, I've been hooked.
Sounds like you had a similar path to another motorsports legend who was also very young and learned that asphalt racing or being in cars is a lot safer than being on dirt bikes. And that gentleman, I don't know if you know, is Jeff Gordon. So it sounds like you're off to a good start, actually.
Yes.
Maybe you'll have the same luck and fate as him. I think you are already, but we'll talk about why here in just a moment. But knowing that you have this dirt bike background, I guess it's safe to say, unlike a lot of your peers, your love of racing is not so much on the blacktop, but more on the dirt surface. What intrigues you about racing on this unique type of racing surface as opposed to the traditional blacktop surface?
Yeah, I love dirt racing. Dirt racing is very fun, and you have to be very up on the wheel. Asphalt is kind of laid back. You need to be super consistent every lap and listen to the spotter, listen to everyone, and really get the car dialed in. Where I feel like dirt, you can be up on the wheel, and it's a lot more driver-based. Asphalt's very driver-based too, but I feel like you can move around on dirt. Dirt's more intense racing, in my opinion, with slide jobs and everything. And the track's always changing. So dirt's a lot of fun to me, but asphalt's also really fun.
Sounds like you enjoy the freedom that's involved in dirt track racing and the fact that you're not constricted to just weekends. I mean, if this is going to be your living, Carson, you're going to be racing almost all the time, no matter what division you're racing in. So I'm sure that part allures you a lot.
Yes, for sure.
You might be the next Kenny Schrader or Kyle Larson before you know it. I'm sure that's some of your heroes, I'm sure.
Yes, Kyle Larson's really cool to me because he can race on any surface and he's really good.
Absolutely. I think a lot of fans over the last 10 years or so are learning for sure that he is not just this talented stock car driver, but he's quite the sensation in the sprint cars and anything on dirt, really. I mean, he did dirt late modifieds and he's been good on those too. So I'm sure drivers like yourself are just like, man, I want to be just like that, or I want to show I can beat him if I get the chance. So let me ask you this before we get back to your questions. Have you had a chance to watch that documentary called Dirt that's been on FS1?
Yeah, so we watched the first episode, but we haven't gone any deeper in that. I don't watch too much TV. We're kind of just go with racing and the lake and everything. But I've watched the first episode and it was pretty good so far.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool to see what you guys at the dirt track do, just because it's no different than NASCAR in a way, but yet it's a different environment than stock car racing for sure. And knowing that, you know, you guys are just as meticulous about trying to figure out, like, push going against the cushion, if you will, or, you know, these races that's out in the Midwest and all, it's such a great, great allure for sure. And I was just watching it when Kyle Larson was kind of detailing what it was like to do this race. I hate that it's escaping me right now, the Chili Bowl. And it was just a preliminary, and it was so intense seeing him get prepared for that. So I just loved watching what dirt racing is all about for sure. You actually bring up a good point about water sports, because that's one of the things I saw on your Instagram. And I was thinking, are you from California? Because you're really good at surfing. You know, what is it about water sports, especially surfing, that you find relaxing? And does it help you get your fix of adrenaline away from the racetrack?
Yeah, it's actually really funny you say that, because I was actually born in California and we actually moved back east when I was super young. I don't remember anything from California, but yeah, so we just moved to the lake and it's awesome. You know, we've got a bass fishing boat and we've got a Malibu wake boat. So I love to fish too, but surfing and tubing and all that stuff, super fun to just get the adrenaline up and still have a lot of fun while you're doing it off the track.
It just looks so natural for you. That's why I was like, you're from California. Or you have to have some blood from their cars. And then it's so funny, because, like, obviously when I think of California and surfing, you're a little too young to probably, but I'm sure you've heard of the Beach Boys. So
yeah
I mean, it's sort
only
of like a
blood from there.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, it's just a given. If you're from the Sunshine State, you have to know surfing and the Beach Boys. So you're two for two on that, which makes you cool in my book already. I wish I could surf, but I tend to just watch people doing extraordinary things versus doing them. I'm boring like that. Now, you race a lot of different cars, which I find intriguing. You know, doing my research about you, you're not just a dirt track racer. I know you've actually been getting on the blacktop with the late model cars, and you actually won a race earlier this year, which was really cool to read about. But for folks like me who will never get the chance to drive any of these cars, how would you describe the experience being in these vehicles from the driver's seat? And what's it most comparable to for someone who's never driven a car?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome to get the opportunity down New Smyrna with Rackley Wars. So it was really cool being able to win my second pro late model start. And that was definitely one of my best racing memories for sure. But I drive the dirt super late model with Mike Marler. And that's a ton of fun too. And that's on dirt. This first portion of the year, we've ran late model stocks in the car store with Bruce Cook. But the end of this year, we're going to prioritize dirt racing with Mike Marler and a little bit with Carver Racing in the meantime on Wednesdays at Millbridge. So it's going to be a fun second half of the year for sure.
Millbridge is certainly a great place to cut your teeth or just keep, you know, making a name for yourself in dirt racing, because I know a lot of NASCAR folks, you know, they have their kids race there, even they themselves race there too. So you're in good company knowing that That's, you know, one of your choices to race that. It's not like saying, I'm going to race at Seekonk and, you know, nobody will know where that is. But Millbridge, oh yeah, everything happens there, which is really cool.
It's a very well-known track for sure.
Absolutely. Now, this might be relating to a question I asked you earlier, but it's just something that I've noticed over the years in terms of these young drivers. It's not like before when I was a kid, obviously the traditional route would be, you know, quarter midgets, go-karts, legends, bandos, late models, and then eventually the top four, three divisions of NASCAR plus ARCA. We have seen an influx of drivers over the years now getting they're cutting their teeth on dirt tracks. You know, maybe you're more qualified to speak on this, but what makes dirt track racing the ideal place for a driver to grow and learn versus the traditional route I just described?
Yeah, dirt racing is really tough. There's no spotters, no mirrors. So you have to be very aware. So you have to listen to the cars around you. They're like little bees in your ears, like knowing if they're outside, inside, where they're at around you. And I feel like Millbridge is really tough. They run the box stocks there. So a lot of the NASCAR little kids run there, and that's a lot of fun. So I run there in the micro sprint car in the 600cc. And those are a lot of fun. You're always on the cushion, which is just a big dirt mound near the wall, and it's always up by the fence. So it's really cool because you're inches off the wall or hitting the wall every lap. So I find that really fun about Millbridge. But also there's sometimes a bottom and there's a berm on the bottom. So that's sometimes really tough to run, but I find Millbridge really fun and it's definitely really tough.
I like it from the way you're describing this, Carson. It almost sounds like being a tightrope artist, you know, like there's no margin for error. You pretty much have to be precise all the time.
Yeah, you do for sure. Millbridge is very tough.
Oh man, that sounds exhilarating actually, to tell you the truth. And I can see why drivers like yourself enjoy dirt racing, just because it's such an adrenaline to push the cars beyond its limits to, like you said, go against the cushion, but because it's obviously the faster line when you go in the higher corners, more RPMs, you know, more speed off the corner. I just think that's such a rush that you just described for us here on the hot seat. So I love that for sure. Now, let me ask you this, because of the fact that you are a Team Hornaday development driver, what are some things that you have learned from Ron and Candace that you feel has made you a better person and driver?
Yeah, Ron and Candace helped me a lot off track with driver development off track, because most of these cars, like little cars nowadays, don't have spotters. So Candace is a really good spotter, but she can't always be spotting for me in some of these cars. But yeah, Ron's taught me a lot about restarts and just line in general and what's grip, like paint is a lot of grip, for example. And Ron's taught me that and just other lines and like tips and tricks about new tracks to me that Ron's got so much knowledge at all these tracks that we go to and tracks that I've never been to. So he helps me a lot with restarts, lines and everything. And then Candace helps me a lot just off track, completely away from the track with just everything I need. So it's awesome to have them two in my corner and helping me at all times.
They're definitely two of the very best to be having as mentors on your side. And, you know, Candace helping you with off the track stuff is really cool. And knowing that Ron's taught you some of his restart tricks, like I said to your peers, I think that's so neat that you have the master in restarts. Even in dirt tracks, you have to be good at that too. And I don't know if you've watched his truck races from the late 90s or in early 2000s, but it was like watching a magician doing their job. It's just, And I used to watch the truck races with Ron. It was like, if he has a restart, I'm like, yep, this guy's cooked. And that was the case.
Yeah.
You know, he's just such a master at that. So it's so cool he's imparting that with you and your teammates over at Team Hornaday Development. Let me ask you this, because I'm just getting to know you. You know, I'm having a good time chatting with you about racing and your journey so far, Carson. But who would you compare your driving style to, past or present?
You there? I think you broke up.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yep, I got you now.
I apologize.
We're good.
I was going to say, you know, if you had to compare yourself to a driver from the past or present in terms of racing style, which driver would you compare yourself to?
That's really tough because of all my different race tracks. Kyle Larson's really good at all surfaces, and I think I aspire to be like him because he can race asphalt and then he can go to dirt track. And every single day of the week, he can go to a new track and be fast anywhere he goes. So I aspire to be like Kyle because he's just really good on every surface he goes to.
He really is. He's a generational talent, to say the least. And have you had a chance to meet him and talk with him about racing?
Yes, we've actually talked a little bit at Millbridge. He used to run Millbridge a little bit, and I think it's actually in the dirt episodes, a little bit of Millbridge. And we raced there, and that was really fun because we talked a little bit there.
That's cool. It's always neat when someone like him takes the time to talk to the future of racing, and he's not like, I've got an ego, I'm too good for you. Like, it's nice to see that drivers like him or one of the other guys that you can just come up to you and just shoot the breeze with or talk racing and business with. So that's really neat that you have that opportunity. I don't know if this is something that happens in your races. I know in the bigger series, this is something that does happen a lot, but if you had a choice of songs that you could play before you're introduced before a race, what songs would you pick to play and why?
It's funny because I don't have any specific songs, but I do like Hardy, Morgan Wallen, and Jason Aldean and Bailey Zimmerman and some of those other guys. I just like them as artists, and I think they have really good songs. But Hardy is always a really good go-to race day song.
Hardy is a very popular choice at Team Hornaday. So I don't know if you guys have a gym over there or whatnot, but I can just imagine that Hardy is playing all the time.
Yeah, we just have very similar interests. And at the shop, it's always fun being there with Joe Ryan and Candace and everyone there, and they definitely blast some music.
Absolutely. Did you have a chance, by the way, to watch your colleague Landon Lewis race at Mid-Ohio? Because like Ron was, he was just glowing about, and I could tell he was just happy to see one of you guys out there in the truck series. Like, did you get a chance to see that spectacular debut by your teammate?
Yeah, I got to watch it on TV, and that was really cool for Landon, and that was a great opportunity for Landon to show what he's got in the truck series, and he was very fast.
He was, and I'm sure when you get your chance in the dirt track, you may get your spotlight too, and I can tell how proud Ron is of you, and Candace too, of you guys doing your thing on and off the racetrack.
For sure.
This is, yeah, absolutely. This is something I hate to ask because when I was your age, Carson, I hated school. Believe it or not, I got to the point where I love school now. But anyways, as a young driver, I'm sure when it's, you know, autumn and winter and early spring, school comes back into the equation. How do you balance the rigors of classes with trying to be this competitive, thriving superstar racer?
Yeah, it's really hard. My dad helps me a lot with that, and I struggle with it a lot. Like, people think that like it's all cool what most people see, but it's really not. It's controlled chaos a little bit, but I struggle with it a little bit, and my dad helps me a lot managing schedules and stuff, so he helps a lot. Joey at Driver Fine helps prepare me for races, and my sims in the back help me a lot just to prepare for tracks, and Ron's always really good at helping prepare me, and just a lot goes into it, but it's very hard.
It sounds like you're no different than a student athlete at your high school who's playing football or baseball, like, except you don't have to pick up a bat or wear a football helmet and jersey. You're wearing your fire suit gloves and shoes and helmet, and you're getting ready to go slug it out at a racetrack. So that's got to be a cool, you know, balance. But of course, like you said, it comes with the territory. Is there a certain subject in school that you're like, yeah, I kind of don't mind it? And is there a certain one where you're like, not a big fan of?
Not a big fan of math, for sure. That's a no-brainer for me. I don't like math because I feel like it's just time and everything. And I like science and some of those others that you can kind of just bust out and get out of the way. But yeah, I definitely don't like math that much.
I can't think of anyone other than, like, I don't know, scientists and meteorologists that love math, but for some reason, it's the one subject in school that always comes back to haunt us. Oh man. And I don't know what math you're doing now, because I'm sure it's a lot different than when I was in high school, but I'll tell you the one math subject I hated in high school was definitely algebra. I never understood it. So
that's what I'm doing right now. So,
I don't envy you. You're probably learning PEMDAS and commutative properties and all that shenanigans. So good luck with all that. I'm glad that's out of my way. Wait till you get to college. If you do, it's even worse.
I know.
Nah, I'm kidding. It's good. I liked it. But you know, we talked a little bit about you doing surfing and water sports and all, but you know, other than those activities away from the racetrack, what are some things that you yourself enjoy doing to decompress from racing, or just like when you actually have time to yourself not to do anything else?
Yeah, it's funny because my parents always laugh at me because we come back from the racetrack and we're home and I'm like, man, I'm kind of bored. So then I jump right back onto the Sims at the house. So I'm just always driving something or having fun with that because the Sims are really fun for me. I get to learn a lot on them and I have a lot of fun. So I like Sims and we have side-by-sides, so we like to ride in the mountains a lot, but unfortunately we haven't had too much time to ride those. But yeah, those are a lot of fun.
The biking part sounds a lot of fun. And the Sims, I'm assuming you're talking about iRacing, of course.
Yep.
Oh, that is such a wonderful, wonderful tool for anybody to get their racing fix and for drivers like yourself to keep your knives sharpened up for the next event. I've never tried it, but I tried its video game predecessor called NASCAR Racing 2003. And it was such a wonderful game back in the day. So it's so cool that you're getting to do iRacing. And have you had a chance to race against, like, say, a World of Outlaws driver or, you know, some of the stock car drivers who dabble on dirt?
I actually haven't on iRacing or anything. I've got to race a lot of them at Millbridge, actually, but never on iRacing.
Well, I guess it doesn't hurt to do it in real life versus on the Sims. Yeah,
I know, right?
You know, it's funny because, like, a lot of your peers are like, oh, I got to race against Carson Hocevar or so-and-so. And I'm just, you're like the first to say, nah, I did it in real life. So, I love that. It's like, you did the real thing. So that's cool. Yeah, this is a lot of fun, man. I'm enjoying this conversation with you on the hot seat, but unfortunately we're down to the last question, but you know, more than welcome to join us again for another one of these in the future. This is kind of a job interview question. I know your peers are like, oh, I don't know about this one, but you know, how do you envision your career in motorsports these next 5 years, ideally?
Ideally, I'm liking the dirt late model route right now with World of Outlaws or Lucas Oil late models or the XR series really stands out to me. And I like those three series a lot because it's super dirt late model racing, which is super fun cars to drive. And they're just a blast on track and they're really fun. And I like those a lot right now. So that's what I'm enjoying the most.
That may mean that we get to see you at these big events one of these days. We'll be on, you know, Flow Sports or Racing America. And if you do, don't forget the folks at TPF who are learning your story. But I'm sure we'll have you on many, many more times, Carson. But before we wrap up your hot seat segment, is there anything else you want to say to the race fans about, you know, who are going to learn about you or just anything in general?
Not really. You can follow me on social media, Carson Brown Racing, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Threads, and all that. So my Instagram is Carson Brown Racing.
And that was Carson Brown of Team Hornady Development, and of course also with Delk Millar Racing. So my thanks to, of course, Carson, Candace, and Ron Hornady Jr. and Taylor Kitchen for making that happen. Really, really happy that we got to do this. And if they ever want to come back on our show, like I've always been saying, they're more than welcome to stop by and tell us all about their latest racing efforts. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Nathan to introduce his hot seat interview with a fellow Texan who is really talented and is making a name for himself in the truck series.
Yeah, sure. So I talked with Caden Honeycutt a couple weeks ago at Pocono Raceway. He was getting set for his debut with Meeks Motorsports in the number 44 truck. Kind of talked about his racing journey, racing the cars for, kind of how he got this opportunity with Nice and what he hopes it can come to and amount to with that organization and both short term and long term. So without further ado, Caden Honeycutt live in the hot seat.
So yeah, just to start, obviously you're here with Nice Motorsports this weekend. Just what does this opportunity mean to you?
It means more than anybody would know, especially to my mom and dad and my family. Just as much as we've, you know, sacrificed with moving houses, moving 5 hours across states just to be able to race, and be able to be here with Nice Motorsports is definitely something that I will cherish for a while, even if, you know, stuff doesn't go well. But just be able to have the chance is still something I will be forever grateful for, from Cody, Al, Lane Moore, and everybody that worked so hard to put this together, and here we are to see what we can do here today at Pocono.
How did this race kind of all come together?
So after, I think, middle of May, we had talked about it, Cody and Al talked to me about it, and I was very on board with it, and I took a job and actually worked there starting at Charlotte Week on the 42. And I kind of just waited till it was my time to work on my truck for this weekend and the truck I'll be on for hopefully another four or five races this year. And we'll see where that takes us. But yeah, that's kind of how it came together. Just a phone call and meet up and made it happen.
What have you been doing with the 42 truck?
Just right now, I'm just basically a guy that just puts stuff together, helps them with whatever they need. And that's what that's when I'm there. I'm not an engineer or anything like that. I'm just there to help out and put stuff together where it needs to be. And, you know, if they need me, then that's where I'll be at. And kind of the same thing is on my truck. I had a lot more detailed work and was able to pour a lot of heart and soul and sacrifice into it. And hopefully that hard work pays off.
So does that make it a little bit more special when you're kind of getting your own truck ready?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely makes it a whole lot more special, and in the know that you work so hard with all your group of guys for the past 2 weeks building it from just basically a chassis and body that was on it. So that makes it more special for the guys that helped us pitch in from the 45 group and our group as well. And we'll see if we can make something even more special at the end of the week.
And you did this race last year, right? Just with a different team. So how does this place suit you? How comfortable did you feel last year?
You know, obviously not practicing or qualifying last year. It was difficult. This was one of the very few tracks I couldn't figure out right away. And it's just different. There's draft involved. There's restarts and stuff are so critical here. And I was at a point with them. They were figuring stuff out, and, you know, we were all doing it together. I feel like I was a top 20 truck, at least for myself. But thankfully, we get to practice and qualify today, hopefully, and I'll be able to put in quality laps and understand what I was missing out on last year, and hopefully have a really good qualifying run, start in the top 10. That would be ideal for me, and this is the time for me to perform, and this is where it has to start at.
And you've done a couple of other, handful of other Truck Series races this year. So how much do you think teams like these and outsiders have really kind of taken notice of what you've done? So do you have a couple of those top tens?
Yeah, whatever I can get in, I'm going to try to exceed the expectation. That's what I have to do in the situation that I'm in. I'm always looking for partners to help us out and maybe carry on for the next four or five races. And, you know, that's our goal is here at Nice. We want to run good, obviously, and, you know, we want to try to win every race we can get in, even if it is a part-time truck. So it's all the opportunities I've gotten from Young's. You know, on point, I'm forever grateful for that G2G. And, you know, it's something that if without those races, there wouldn't be this race. So, like I said, I'm grateful for those owners and allowing me to showcase what I can do. And this is the time now to step up and make something happen in a good truck. So there's not really any excuse to back down from it.
Now, you obviously got a guy like Ross Chastain as a teammate here this weekend. Have you been able to kind of talk with him, learn from him? And, like, how much can, you grow just being around a guy like that?
Right, yeah. Ross is very involved here at Nice, more than I had actually thought before I came over here in May. I was able to lean on him a little bit about qualifying here because the trucks have not qualified since 2019, and he actually qualified second here in 19. So, be able to lean on him and kind of ask him some pointers of what I should do, what I should expect, and he was so helpful, and he's helpful at Nice as a whole, not just me. He helps Carson, Lawless, Bailey when he drives. So. Very thankful for that, and I'll be able to take his advice and actually really be able to use it here today.
Now, I also want to ask about the Cars Tour stuff. I think you're fourth in points over there, so just kind of how would you evaluate your season so far in the Cars Tour?
Yeah, we've had a good year so far, good solid season. Well, we missed a race at Florence, and that really put us behind a little bit, but the Cars Tour is best of best. You know, the Le Mans Stock Racing is where it's at right now. As for a team, for a team that hasn't been successful in the past with what they've had, and to be able to do what we're doing right now is pretty good. I would say we've surprised a lot of people, especially going to a new chassis and having to relearn everything. And we've been so damn close every week. We are one of the cars to beat, and just, you know, we're trying to get better and finishing races off. We just lack a little speed at the end of these races, and but we're getting there. Throwback is next week, and we did really well at Hickory in the first part of the season, so we'll see if we can do that again, and maybe on the car side get our first win of the year, but we'll focus on that next week.
Obviously, that's all, you know, short track racing. You look at the truck series, that's a lot more air racing, but is there any similarities that you kind of pick up on, or is it kind of just two completely different animals?
Man, they're just, on the mile and a half side, it's just completely different with draft and things like that. Now, getting the characteristics of the truck, I think being a truck arm car and stuff like that, it's definitely similar in some aspects. On the short track side, for sure, I've been able to take a lot of late model stock stuff to the short track stuff side on the trucks, and probably the most comparable late model stock to a NASCAR car is the Xfinity car. So you're not able to take everything you can from the truck, but without late model stock racing, I wouldn't be here. So that series has taught me a lot, and that car has taught me a lot, and it's definitely for sure built my racecraft to what it is right now. And always can get better, and that's why I continue to race that series, is to win and get better in each and every race that I step into.
Obviously, you know, Josh Berry is kind of a bit of a legend in that series. Now he's going to cup racing next year. Does a guy like that kind of serve as an inspiration to you to, you know, stay motivated up here at NASCAR's top three levels?
Absolutely. Josh has worked his ass off for 10 years at Junior Motorsports and the stock car stuff, and you know, he stuck it out. He didn't quit. He didn't back down. He always stayed in it and just waited for that chance to run Xfinity. And he did what he was supposed to do, and this is what he deserves. He deserves to go to the four car next year with Stuart Haas. So I'm happy for him. Definitely a guy that I look up to, being in the similar situation I am to him, you know, financial wise and sponsor wise. And he was able to find a way to make it work. And you know, that's somebody who we try to, you know, strive to be as, and, you know, try to strive to be better than him. You know, everybody wants to be better than everybody. So, you know, I try to be like Josh, but you have to be a little better. So that's what I'm trying to be like.
How can the Cars Tour serve as a bridge to NASCAR's top levels?
I would say, as a racing perspective, there's no better competition than late model stocks. If you can run in a 30 car consistent field and be able to do what you've been doing, like Quapel has the last 2 years, it's huge. And I feel like that's, as a racecraft wise, and it'll really show who can really drive a race car and who really can't. That's just a straight, you know, fact, or that's not my opinion, that's a straight fact about stock, late model stock. Either you got it or you don't. I feel like that reveals itself in that stage. So I think that's where, you know, that's where it will really prevail, seeing who can really drive and wants to move on to the next level.
And obviously that new ownership group over there, and I also feel like just a lot of momentum is, you know, building and gaining from that series. So I'm just excited about kind of where that series is headed right now.
Yeah, I think they're going to do a great job with it. Obviously this year they haven't taken over the management side, but still right now the management side's great. There's nothing wrong with it. I think it's ran really well, efficient, and the only thing I would probably say different is probably to tech down some cars a little harder than what they have, especially this year. Hopefully they crack down on that next year, but I'm confident they're smart. They know what to do, and you know, they'll know how to go and support the grassroots short track guy that can make it and figure out a way to make him race. And hopefully that's something that they do next year, and I'm pretty confident that they will.
Now, you said you hope to do maybe five or six more races with Nice this year. So that said, obviously owner points are so important. So how important is this week, and not just to kind of prove yourself, but also kind of get some of those owner points and move your guys' feet over there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're at the mercy right now of rain and stuff like that, rain out stuff. So I think even if we win tomorrow, I don't even think we would be locked in for points. So, you know, we'll just continue to show up every race that we go to, and whether we're locked in or not. You know, it's you got to do it the hard way, you got to do it the hard way. So it's unfortunate, that's where it's at, but I'm not worried about it. I feel like we can go every week and be just fine. So we'll just focus on this weekend and we'll figure that part out for the next one, and we'll continue to strive. And obviously, like I said, we're still looking for partners for next four or five races that we want to strive and do, and we can definitely do something incredible as long as we're given the chance.
You know, why do you think Nice Motorsports is a place where you can grow and develop and be successful as a driver?
Man, Nice is, Mike, Cody, and them, and Al have grown a team is pretty nuts for what they've been given and what they've been provided. I've worked there for 2 months now, and I don't see any reason why this team can't win a championship, if not multiple. Very smart guys. Phil is such a smart guy. Mike Hillman and Cody's smart. Like, they can get it done, and I know they can get it done. So that's a place where I want to be at, and, you know, I want to run for a championship next year. That's my goal, and it all starts right here today, and we'll see how it comes about. But can't talk about next year if we don't perform in the part-time races this year that I got. So I need to do my job, and maybe we'll speak about that for next month or two.
And beyond this weekend, you're going to keep working on the 42 truck as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Any week that I won't be running, I'll definitely be working on that truck. So I'll be here every race, and I'm not doing a late model stock race on top of the weekend. And I'll be helping out, and just like how everybody else does on the team. So I'm not viewed as any different than another employee, and that's how it is if I'm not driving for that weekend.
And that was Caden Honeycutt with Nathan Solomon on the nightcap portion of Hot Seat. So thank you to Caden for taking time out of his schedule to talk to Nathan and all about what he's been doing in the world of racing and sim racing too. So super fun to hear from him and really spotlight these young guns these last several weeks here on the World's Fastest Hour of Racing Talk. We've definitely talked your ears off, folks, about all that's going to be happening at Indianapolis in terms of the NASCAR action, the IndyCar action. Really, after this, it's going to be Nathan's turn to be back at the racetrack. So I think that's going to be his final thoughts for this show. I've already said my piece. So Nathan, why don't you tell us about the road ahead at Indianapolis and what you're looking forward to at the road course in Watkins Glen?
Yeah, a lot of road course racing for sure. Don't always see like back-to-back Cup Series road courses, so it should be fun. Obviously, some oval action, like I said, with the trucks and ARCA Friday night at IRP. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to Watkins Glen. That's obviously my home track. Only about 45 minutes down the road, just a couple towns away. So that's certainly my favorite race weekend of the year. Looking forward to covering all the action because. Just looking at the playoff cut line right now for the Cup Series, ooh, man, it is tight, it is close. There's going to be a lot of fantastic storylines going into that weekend, so looking forward to covering everything and bringing some great written content and video content to our website and to our social media platforms. So obviously we'll have plenty of content from all the Indianapolis stuff this weekend, but a ton of content next weekend. At the Glen.
And it'd be a lot of fun in the Finger Lakes region, folks. So stay tuned for that. And I know Wayne Regal, who's been traveling with us and SRX, I'm sure he's looking forward to having some downtime after next weekend because that man has been on the road for these last 6 weeks and really appreciative of him really, you know, doing all the great things he's been doing.
And let me tell you, Wayne, after shooting SRX next Thursday in Missouri, he is driving to Watkins Glen on Friday. That is not a short drive. So Wayne is the man. He's been killing it for us. Been fun working with him. So excited to work with him one more time again this year.
Certainly. And we've got to thank his wife, Jenna, for being so patient and understanding about him being on the road so much. So Jenna, if you ever want to, you know, do a race with us too, let us know. But yeah, Wayne's been awesome. So thank you, Wayne, for doing everything you've been doing with us. And sure, the folks at SRX feel the same way about you too. And I want to take a moment to thank everybody who chipped into Wayne's GoFundMe after what happened to him and several other photographers at Pocono. That was so nice of you folks to chip in, do what you could to help him out. And hopefully he's back on his feet. He is back on his feet, but I mean, hopefully others who were impacted by what happened at Pocono are back on their feet again. So thank you, folks, for proving that humanity still exists. And also to shout out to Logan Skeeden, Maddie Skeeden, Mike Moore for all their great stuff they've done at Road America this year, and our team last weekend at the Michigan race, Stephen Conley and Wayne Regal. Really a lot of folks that go behind the scenes that you don't really get to see or don't get to be on this podcast. We got to give them a lot of shout out and thank yous for making it happen to give you folks at home what you want to get closer to the racing action. Well, with that, I think it's time to go ahead and put a bow on episode 82 and get ready for episode 83, folks. That's right. We are 17 away from episode 100. So for Nathan Solomon and Carson Brown and Caden Honeycutt, I am Rob T. Youngson saying thank you so much for joining us here on the world's fastest hour of racing talk. To catch our previous episodes, check those out on any major podcasting platforms such as Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. We will see you all next week to talk about the post-Indy pre-Watkins Glen edition of our show. So hang tight, stay cool, and enjoy these last few weeks of summer, unless you're in Texas, which is never going to end in Texas, I guess. But with that, as we always say, let's go get that checkered flag. And until next time, everyone, so long, everybody.